This is the Taco Boat Wellness Podcast with your host, your coach, your Everside Wellness Practitioner, Courtney Handelin. I love tacos and a good play on words as much as the next person. Okay, maybe a little bit more than the next person. But this podcast is about more than just that. Just like each taco can have a variety of toppings, so too is each person's path to wellness. Both tacos and wellness are customizable for each individual. And with each season, it may look a little bit different, and that's totally okay. In this podcast, you'll gain insight from providers here at our Waukesha Clinic and all across Everside Health. We'll even sprinkle in a few local community experts, all to tap into the many areas or toppings of wellness. So let's get this party started and taco boat wellness. Okay. All right. Welcome back to the Taco Boat Wellness Podcast. This is episode number 39, and I have a special guest with me today, Andy Mitchell. And Andy is a licensed clinical social worker with a background in the military and family populations. She has a BA in political science from North Carolina State University and a master in social work from the University of South Carolina. Andy started with Everside Health in August of 2022. So at the time of recording, you're coming up on your 1 year anniversary. Congrats.
Yes, thank you.
And she works with our Live Better team for virtual mental health. And Andy lives in West Texas with her fiance and Pembroke Welsh Corgi named Da Vinci. I just love that. Such a good name for a dog.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming back, Andy. I know you've been on a couple podcast episodes with us, so some people might recognize your voice, which is nice. And today, like I said, we're talking about sleep. And I know we've had a couple podcasts about sleep, so I'll link those in the show notes for people who are interested in diving into kind of more aspects of sleep. But I thought, since May is kind of our mental health awareness month, and you are someone that I know on our team who is an expert in the mental health side of things, that we could spend a little bit of time talking about how sleep and mental health are intertwined. Okay, hold up. Before we go any further, we do want to give a quick disclaimer that this podcast is provided for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute providing medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your doctor or other qualified health provider regarding a medical condition, especially keeping in mind that we're speaking in general terms and each individual is different. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something stated on this podcast. Neither Everside Health nor its employees nor any contributor to this podcast makes any representations expressed or implied with respect to the information provided herein or to its use.
And I guess I'll start off with my first question of how does sleep, or I guess really how does lack of sleep impact our mental health?
Okay. Thanks for having me back as well. So sleep is very much, you know, basic need. We need it to survive. We need it to function. And so doing the opposite, poor sleep or lack of sleep really affects kind of all cognitive abilities. So paying attention, learning and retaining new information, recent memory as well. And so we do have consistently poor sleep. So this would be, you know, we have an off night. When we consistently have bad sleep, nights, weeks, even months in a row, we start to notice, you know, mood's not as great. Irritability is usually really high. Things like, I don't know, minor annoyances become really big annoyances. And then even past being annoyed, we typically don't have the best emotional regulation. And so with those annoyances, maybe we actually freak out on someone or we have a big overreaction to what would typically be a small annoyance. And then we know there's tons of science behind poor sleep too. It increases our cortisol levels, which is anxiety, and then kind of keep us in a very stressful, anxious space. So those are kind of the big things. And then kind of the opposite of, you know, healthy sleep. We can regulate emotions better. Our brain's working. We don't really have that brain fog that we can think of when we're tired or exhausted. And then overall just improves our mind-body connections.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure probably most people, I think that, you know, asking the question, it seems like silly. I know we have to bring it up because you never know when someone it might really resonate with them. But I mean, if I just think to a night that I've had a bad night of sleep, and then the next day, I am just not myself, you know, just definitely a little bit more quick to get irritated. amongst other things. So I guess especially if we look at the mental health side of things, thinking of people who, like, if they're struggling with depression or anxiety or, you know, other mental imbalances or illnesses, I'm guessing the lack of sleep would just have a tendency to exacerbate those symptoms.
Yes, absolutely. And so it definitely, a lack of sleep doesn't cause mental health, but can definitely make mental health worse. And so, you know, whether that's we already have some anxiety or we're already depressed or have thoughts of self-harm or suicidality, all of those typically do worsen when we have poor sleep or at least inconsistent sleep. Some of the criteria for most depressive disorders actually is, you know, not enough sleep, poor sleep, or the whole other opposite of oversleeping.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because I know sometimes one of the, like, a symptom of depression, or even if you're in like a seasonal depression or just like feeling down, like you've had a rough day, a lot of times people have the tendency to, like, I just want to go to sleep. So then I guess that leads into, like, what does too much sleep look like? How does that impact our mental health?
Okay. And so most Americans are not getting too much sleep usually. So even when we think of I'm sleeping in or I'm oversleeping, a lot of adults function on like 4 to 7 hours, which is, science would say, is not enough. We need to be about 7 to 9 still, even as adults. But if we're thinking of oversleeping, like, you know, I'm taking my weekend to lounge, that's fine. Like, that's not an issue, not an area of concern. But when we're oversleeping and, you know, almost the times we should be up and awake and functioning, we're sleeping, we're taking more naps, we're not really getting anything done, we don't have any physical movement in our day, it definitely can make a lot of those depressive symptoms worse. And then the brain kind of reacts very similarly to a lack of sleep as it does to oversleeping. So we're still tired, we're groggy, emotional regulation still doesn't come as easily. We're not really getting up and moving and using our body. And so we actually see a pretty big connection between physical health issues and oversleeping.
That's interesting. I guess I wouldn't, I mean, it makes sense, but I wouldn't have guessed that there was such a big connection to the brain and that, its ability to do those things with too much sleep. Is there a number that you've seen? I'm putting you on the spot here. Is there a number that you've seen in research of, like, if you're getting more than this, that's.
I don't think I've ever seen a number, but I've always seen it kind of labeled as like lounging, sleeping throughout the day. So, like, instead of getting up and, you know, going to a job or doing a hobby or something or an activity, you kind of wake up in the morning, eat, go back to sleep, have lunch, go back to sleep. So that sounds more like it's almost like a constant cycle of in and out of sleep. Versus, like, you know, you go to bed and sleep for 12 hours. Because if your body needs 12 hours of rest and it's rejuvenating for you the next day, then I can very much, like, listen to your body, do what it wants you to do. But the idea of, like, cyclical sleep and, like, never getting up and doing something is where we kind of label that as oversleeping.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm glad that you clarified that because I was thinking of, like, yeah, I was putting it to hours or, like, like you said, like the 12 hours, but you're right. Some people really just might need 12 hours and it's important to honor that. Okay. So what strategies or tools then do you suggest for those who are struggling with sleep because of their mental health state? Like, you know, I'm some people with anxiety, it's really hard to fall asleep or they fall asleep, but then they wake up and they can't fall back asleep.
Yeah. The biggest thing would be absolutely getting some kind of routine. The brain and body thrive on a routine. And so even when, you know, if we're in an anxious state or depressive state, that is very hard to find a routine and stick with something. You know, trying to make it a priority, a routine of, like, getting up and going to bed. I'm very big on, you know, a bedtime routine. It kind of sounds silly. Like, I treat it like you're a little kid. I'm like, I need to wind down after dinner and I need to relax before I go to sleep. You shouldn't be going, you know, running 3 miles and going straight to bed. We're not going to sleep well. Our body's not ready for that just yet. And so finding whatever works for you to have that unwind, to have that unwind, relax a little bit before trying to go to sleep. And if you're someone who, like myself, I'm very anxious when I'm sleeping or trying to go to sleep. So I'm like, what do I need to do tomorrow? What's on my to-do list? Like, I'm thinking of all these things. So I've started really prioritizing, like, the very end of my workday. And I will make a whole task list for the next day. So that way, like, when I go to bed, I'm like, okay, everything's already written down. I don't have to problem solve anything. You can do that for your household, your kids, your significant other, wherever you need to kind of problem solve and make list. And then getting into bed, trying to for a consistent time, but then always trying to wake up at the same time too. The waking up is a way more important piece necessarily than the going to bed aspect.
Oh, really?
So consistently waking up at the same time, you know, daylight saving time, all that fun stuff. Woohoo. But like trying to wake up as much as we can at the same time, even if we went to bed late, so we can start to get kind of that cycle back on track. And then relaxation before bed can be whatever you want it to be. I'm not a bath person, but like showers, baths, breathing exercises. I really struggle to go to sleep. I will do progressive muscle relaxation. So very much like an ordered tension and relaxation activity from head to toe, toe to head, whichever direction you want to start with, until I just feel more relaxed. That routine is huge. Like we want the brain and body to know when we get into our bed, we're going to sleep. And you know, if we're playing on our cell phones, we're watching TV, we're hanging out with our significant other, hanging out with kids, playing with our pet, all of those things are going to disrupt that idea of bed is for sleeping.
Yeah, right. I think that's a good point too, to think about, like, you know, a lot of people that I meet with, they will say like, oh yeah, I do have a bedtime routine, but it involves some of those things that you just said, right? And you kind of have to think about like the things that are in your routine, it sounds like, really take a moment to think about, are they really telling your brain that it's time to go to sleep, or are they stimulating your brain?
Yeah.
So it sounds like that's a key, you have to identify what's happening there and see how you can shift so that you're increasing the things that are telling your brain it's time to relax as opposed to stimulating your brain. Sounds like for a lot of people, it might just be kind of like shifting around what that evening looks like. And like you said, getting your to-do lists in order before you lay down so that you're not stressing about that. I like that. What about, so one thing that you said was the electronics. I know I'm certain that I probably talked about this in any other sleep episode, and any sleep podcast anywhere is probably going to talk about this. But let's spend a little bit of time talking about that and maybe talking, like highlighting what kind of things are going to stimulate your brain that maybe you shouldn't be doing right before bed.
Okay. So we think of, you know, our cell phones, tablets, Kindles, whatever. If we're on social media gives us, for a lot of people, a very big dopamine high, as do things like TikTok, any kind of video where we're getting that instant gratification.
Or the funny videos.
Yes. Super exciting, very high stimulation. Video games as well. Even if they're just little basic video games on your phone, really big in the reward system section of our brain. And so the brain is like, I have to keep going. I have to keep engaging. That brain is not getting sleepy. You may do that for hours before you then realize, oh crap, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. I should be sleeping. Or you actually may be yawning. You're like, wait, what time is it? And we kind of have to check in. And the same goes for at least, you know, electronics do have a lot of settings now too. So, you know, cell phones and cell phones and like tablets and stuff do have like the settings where you can take the blue light out. You can tone down the brightness. Those are all very helpful. And then even with things like Kindles for people who are readers before bed, if you want to do a handheld book, that'd be a great substitution, or working to change the settings. So your Kindle's not as bright. Some of them even have like, it's like a yellowy tone, as part of like their nighttime setting. But much more calming and relaxing on the eyes, doesn't wake the brain up as much, but I guess it also may depend on what you're reading too. If we're reading like the most exciting book, it might be a little harder to come down off that. Then, you know, reading something very relaxing and soothing and then trying to disconnect and go to sleep.
I have noticed that too, of like, if I'm reading like a novel or, you know, something that gets my attention, I might go to bed and be like, man, I'm so exhausted. Like, maybe I'll just read a chapter, but then I'm like, you know, I'm hooked. I got to keep reading, keep reading. So I have to keep like a more dry material, whether it's like a learning type of book, you know, by my bedside so that I can, if I do read, I can read a little bit of that then to like tell my brain to go back down. But I almost think, I mean, I'm just thinking out loud here, making the realization of like, I got to keep those novels away from my bed. Like those should be for like Saturdays in the hammock kind of reading.
Out on your couch, on the porch.
Yeah. Right. During like the maybe, daytime. Or like you said, like maybe after dinner, I'm not watching TV, like while the kids are playing, I sit down and read. That's when I can read my novel. That's fun.
Yeah.
And in the bed, I should really be reading something that will put me to sleep.
Yes. And most people know exactly what kind of reading material will make them tired. I'm not as much of a novel girl, more of like self-help world. Those keep my brain super awake. Like I want to know the next thing. I want to know the next tidbit of information they're going to share. If I had to read a novel in bed, I would go to sleep.
Okay. Five yeah, that's
and
good.
I'm like,
point.
no way. Like, this is different. Not the energy, the vibe I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So I like that. It really is. It's very personal, right? To
yeah.
what you need, and like we said before, like tapping into and thinking about what is causing you to be stimulated and what's helping you to be a little bit more relaxed. Yeah. And electronics, I think last time I looked into it, it said like an hour, if not 90 minutes before
yes.
bed, shutting off all those, right?
The yeah, I've seen up things. To 2 hours, but then I
two
think
hours.
Of even just my own schedule, like 2 hours is tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be totally disconnected for 2 hours. So I think if most people can get close to that hour, especially if they're able to use a blue light or turn down the electronic, can make an improved difference. Another thing would be I have consistently covered like bright lights in my room. So I have like a standing fan that has, for whatever reason, a neon blue light on top of it. And so we just like put a hat to cover the top of it. And like our robot vacuum has a very bright light too. And so it's under a dresser. And so making your space as dark and cozy would definitely be, well, so not really an avoidance, but a good thing to put in for sleep as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. For the, you know, as part of just good sleep hygiene. I talk a lot about that with people too, the like making the space dark. My husband always makes fun of me because I'm like, yeah, like putting a piece of tape
yes.
over the little.
I bought little like light. Stickers from Amazon to cover up the light.
I love it. Yes. Good. I'm not the only crazy one
yeah.
covering, like pulling the blinds as tight as they can
yeah.
go. And I know there's things like to like keeping it cooler, and there's,
mm-hmm.
you know, different ambient noise things that you can get. There was another question that I wanted to ask you. I can't remember. You talked a little bit about your own personal routines. Is there anything else that you do to ensure you get a good night of sleep?
I'm a pillow fanatic. Like I spent years searching for the perfect pillow. And it actually started, I, you know, was young in my 20s and I complained to my chiropractor about how like my sleep just sucked. And I had on some kind of nice pair of Nike, like tennis shoes. And he was like, how much you pay for those shoes? And I was like, oh gosh, you know, anywhere from like $80 to $130, $140. Like, I'm not sure. And he was like, you know, think of how long you actually wear shoes during the day, especially if they're just specifically for working out and not activities. And then the minimal amount we spend on pillows. Oh, I guess I never thought about that. And he showed me this crazy pillow and I was like, I'm not going to pay that kind of money for a pillow. It was like $300 pillow. But he was like, think of how much time we actually spend sleeping and how important a supportive pillow is to your head, your neck, your breathing, all the comfort things that happen during sleep. And after that, I really got into pillow research. So there's a pillow out there for everyone. But thinking, you know, be very intentional with your bedding, how you're sleeping, what's in your space. You know, some people like their room to smell a certain way. You know, I do have a sound machine, mainly because I'm a snorer. It's not for myself. It's more my fiance. But a sound machine to block me out. And then two fans going, and the room is always cold and very dark. And so that works for me. I know some people are like, they're like, I can sleep with any kind of brightness. I need a blanket. I need my whole body to be covered. I need to be like, I'm in a little cocoon. And then let me see if there's anything else. My bedtime routine is probably a bigger help too. About
sure.
like trying to check in, trying to be intentional,
right.
eventually putting my phone face down and being done with it. And then I'm trying to see if there's anything else. I think that's it. I think those are the biggest things I do. I mentioned doing PMR earlier.
Yeah.
If, you know, I felt anxious or just really couldn't get comfy. Yeah, those are kind of the biggest things. I think just overall recommendations for anyone else, finding something that works, like, you know, sleeping in one house, you know, everything's different. Maybe you go visit family and you're not a good sleeper when you're somewhere else. You know, finding what keeps you comfortable whenever. And then once you get a routine, finding things you can add or modify in there that help sleep feel better. Because sleep
yeah.
should be relaxing, comfortable. We should always feel safe when we're sleeping. And so if there's anything in our household, room, or whatever that's making that not feel like the dynamic, those are all things we've got to address. Because good sleep, we need for the brain.
Well, I like how you mentioned too, the allowing yourself to maybe invest in your good sleep,
yes.
right? Whether that means a good pillow or mm-hmm. maybe stop buying those cheap sheets that drive you nuts when you're sleeping mm-hmm. or, you know.
Sheets that make you sweaty, get a different
yeah,
set of sheets.
Right. Yeah, all that. It's you know, just as important as your good shoes that you're you're wearing. I think I remembered one thing that I wanted to ask you, if we could go backwards just for a second. And I know I'm putting you on the spot here with this one, but you had mentioned how, I think this is just such a hot button thing, but the social media, you mentioned how that's a big dopamine hit for a lot of people. Yeah. I also think on the counter side, it's probably a big cortisol spiker for a lot of people. Is there anything in research that you've seen supporting like how elevating your cortisol levels before sleep can impact your sleep? I mean, I'm guessing it's the same as dopamine, right? Like it's kind of like a stimulant in a way where you're not going to get restful sleep.
Yes. And so I've seen some stuff on the connection of, you know, poor sleep, oversleep, giving those same things because it's related to being a stressor. If we think of, you know, social media can be all kinds of things at this point. So if it is a stressor for us, or, you know, it makes us anxious or depressed or just overwhelmed, looking at it, checking in with it, I would assume it has the same outcomes with the oversleeping and undersleeping of, you know, high cortisol levels equal high stress levels, overall just equal poor sleep, poor functioning. I can definitely look for
and see. I think you cut out. I lost you for a second. I heard I can definitely look and then.
Okay. I can definitely look and see if I can find some numbers that relate to what that looks like, but I haven't seen any, I don't even say recent research. I don't know that I've ever seen like some full research on what that looks like.
Yeah. I would think that'd be hard to
put a lot of measurement.
But I mean, I think it's just good to point out, right, that that's a probably a pretty fair theory of like, it's also, that's a stimulant in its own way, not good to do right before bed. Okay, so you talked about having a good pillow. Maybe you can send me, if there's like a pillow company that you love, send that to me. Any other resources that you want to share? Like, do you have favorite apps, or do you have your favorite, like, is there a special type of sound machine you really like, etc.?
Okay. So for my sound machine, we do have one that has, gosh, probably 20 different settings on it, for one sound and then like the different sounds that it makes. You know, everyone has a different feeling about white noise, black noise, brown noise, all the different ones of those. And then there's things like, you know, rain, like rain makes me feel panic sleep. I think there's a water leak. So that's not the sleeping sound for me. I think something bad is going on. But getting one that has a lot of options so you can pick and choose. You know, there's some sounds when you're trying to rest that just make you feel yucky and they don't feel comfortable with your body. So having one you can pick and choose, change all of that. A couple apps that I consistently use. The VA funded a sleep app for CBTI, which is cardiobehavioral therapy for insomnia. And so it's totally free. They have lots of resources in it. It has sleep trackers, sleep health, what sleep should look like at my current age, all kind of different things in there to help people, you know, one, track their sleep, learn kind of some of their sleep habits, whether they're healthy or not, and then different ways to improve those. And so totally free. I know it's on iPhone and Android. And then Snore Lab is also on both. I got this because I was informed I was a snorer 2 years ago and I didn't believe it. and so it is, I think, free for a couple weeks, but I think for the whole year, it's maybe like $15. And it lets you record your sleep. So you can actually hear, you know, if you talk, if you wake up, how much you're moving. And then it kind of gives you a rating based on how much sound you made. Ideally, we should be quiet, peaceful sleepers. But if we're snoring, it can hear like traffic outside my house. And so very sensitive. And so it can tell like how much you're moving around. I can hear my pet snoring on it sometimes. So that really helped me get a good gauge of like when I was having restful sleep and being able to see, you know, I had a really high snore score today or last night. So my sleep probably wasn't very good. And I've used that with my doctor even to show like, they're like, oh, you know, you're in your early 30s. I'm like, no, I'm a snorer. Like most nights I may snore. And so that's helped me get like set up other things to do testing and stuff too.
Wow. Those both sound like really cool resources. I'm excited to check them out personally. But yeah, I like how you mentioned too, that they can be good tools then to further conversations with other, you know, with your doctor or other specialists and just to help improve your sleep even more. That's fantastic. Any favorite apps that you like to use for the progressive muscle relaxation?
I don't think I've ever used it yourself. I just do it myself. I told myself big muscles I hold for 30 seconds, little muscles I hold for 15 seconds. And I usually start from the feet and go up to my head and then go head back down.
Yeah,
and I think I about, like that. You know, passing thoughts. One of the connections I use, thoughts are like clouds. And where I live, it's really windy. And so if a thought pops up, the wind is just going to blow it away like instantly. And yes. I go back into just focusing on the muscle tension and the relaxation.
Yeah, I love that. I think progressive muscle relaxation is great. Okay, let's see. Anything else that you want to share?
I'm going to harp on this a few times, but like, you know, find something that works for you. You know, what we worked at 16 might not work in our 30s, might not work in our 50s. Right. And, you know, finding a way to prioritize sleep and then playing around with it. If you try something for a whole month and your sleep's not better, do something different. We don't want people, you know, spending years sleeping poorly and getting no relief, because that is just, you know, a whole nother world of issues that are going to come up with having poor sleep for so long. And the end of the day, if, you know, it's something you don't feel like this, you can fix yourself, talking to your doctor, talking with a therapist, if maybe a talk therapy is needed related to, you know, just anxieties or depressive symptoms. And then your doctor, if they do then decide that maybe medications could help you sleep too.
Yeah, I think too, talking with, like if you are living with other people, talking with those other people, especially if you have a part, you know, sharing a bed with someone, sometimes that can be helpful too.
Yes.
Talking with them about like, you know, what in the environment is not, probably not working for you, and seeing if you can make some, I'm losing words. What's the term for like meeting in the middle? I guess that
I'll just say that.
Yeah, it's a compromise on things, or, you know, having another space that you can go to. Mm-hmm. I always think it's really smart. Like if you're not sleeping well in your own bed, make sure you have another space that you can go to, to try and sleep better there. Sometimes just switching rooms or switching to a different space does the trick.
Yes.
Well, I guess I'll just use this point to plug for Everside, the well-being webinar. They're doing a 3-part series in May on managing stress. So also related to mental health. And I'm sure in there, they're also going to mention sleep and the impact that that has on mental health, like we just did. Other than that, I think this has been great. And I think there's been some new fun things that we shared here that weren't covered in our other sleep episodes. So I'm glad that we were able to talk about this and, yeah, circle back to the importance and the impact that sleep makes on our mental health. Great. Well, thank you so much for recording with me today, Andy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
I'm so glad we got to talk about wellness today. And I'm especially thankful for you, our audience. Thanks for tuning in. If you have any questions from this episode, please feel free to shoot me an email. For our Waukesha Everside members, if you would like to chat about how the concepts you heard in this episode can fit into your own personal taco of life, call to schedule a coaching appointment. If you really love this episode, be sure to give us 5 stars and share it with a friend. Everyone can find us on Facebook and YouTube at Waukesha Employee Health and Wellness. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from so you never miss an episode. See you on the first Tuesday of every month for Taco Tuesday. Until then, bye! Thank you.